Larry Crowdle is an analyst at Research Triangle Institute International in North Carolina. Since 1994, he has worked on the National Survey on Drug Use and Health, NISDA, formerly known as the National Household Survey on Drug Abuse, sponsored by the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration, SAMHSA for short. He has co-authored NISDA reports and short reports on prescription drug misuse. He was the RTI lead on methodological research for redesign of the NISDA prescription drug module. All right.
Well, thank you. And first, I want to acknowledge my co-authors, Joel Kennett, Dicey Painter and Peggy Barker of SAMHSA, and Elizabeth Dean and Patricia LeBaron of RTI International. No financial relationships to disclose. I also want to acknowledge the support for this research through SAMHSA's National Survey on Drug Use and Health, or NISDA, and also through SAMHSA's National Analytics Center. I think I'm kind of preaching to the converted when it talks about discussing the public health importance of prescription drug misuse. What I'm mainly going to focus on are methodological research findings to inform the redesign of the prescription drug questions in NISDA. And I also have copies of slides from the presentation and copies of handouts that contain more detail about some of this information. In terms of the public health importance, NISDA in 2011 estimated that there were more than 6 million people who misused prescription type drugs in the past month, including about 4.5 million misusers of prescription pain relievers. And not including alcohol or tobacco, only marijuana use is more prevalent. And according to the, according to NISDA, the number of people with pain reliever dependence or abuse increased from about 1.4 million people in 2004 to nearly 2 million people in 2010. And the Drug Abuse Warning Network, or DAWN, found that the number of emergency department visits that were specifically attributable to misuse of opioids more than doubled over this period to nearly 500,000, and I think Lieutenant Commander Toblin mentioned that previously. Next, I want to describe just some general features of the overall design for NISDA and measurement of prescription drug misuse. NISDA is a large survey of the civilian population. It uses an in-person interview on a computer-assisted instrument. The most sensitive questions are self-administered. And to permit the measurement of trends, NISDA keeps a core set of questions constant from year to year. NISDA covers four classes of specific prescription drugs, and misuse is defined as use of drugs that were not prescribed for you or that you took only for the experience or feeling it caused. Although questions are included about lifetime misuse of specific prescription drugs, analytically, more of the focus is on misuse of any drugs in the overall category, such as any misuse of pain relievers. And again, consistent with what I said previously, NISDA has historically kept the same set of prescription drugs in the interview for trend analysis. However, that poses a number of challenges in measuring prescription drug misuse. For instance, you might think, oh, if we keep the same set of questions constant, well, then we have a reliable trend. The problem is prescription drugs in the United States is not static. For example, more than half of the stimulants and sedatives currently in the NISDA questionnaire are no longer legally available. So while that might be important from a historical basis, they're less relevant to what's going on right now. The construct of misuse is more complex than the construct for just any use. And even if the survey asks a single question, like, have you ever used such and such drug that was not prescribed for you or you took only for the experience or feeling it caused, there really are multiple questions embedded in that single question, and respondents need to go through multiple levels of cognitive processing in order to provide an answer. So some key things for the redesign. First of all, the decision was made to focus on misuse of specific prescription drugs in the past 12 months rather than the lifetime period. In the current instrument, methamphetamine is grouped as part of the prescription stimulants. In the redesign, it's getting its own module separate from stimulants. There will be electronic images on screen rather than pill cards. And what I'm going to focus on in the rest of the talk is methodological research to assess questioning for misuse and the format. A focus group was conducted with treatment providers to get their feedback on wordings for misuse. Usability testing focused mainly on logistical issues related to how well respondents could answer the questions. And the cognitive interviews focused more on respondents' understanding and processing of the terms so that if they showed difficulty with any of them, that there would be an opportunity to make revisions and test them in subsequent rounds. And I think it's important to note at the beginning that an aim of this research was not to estimate prevalence. The treatment providers in the focus groups, a key question we asked them was to evaluate the current wording of not prescribed or only for the experience or feeling. They had no major issues with use of not prescribed. They thought for the experience or feeling worked well for tranquilizers and pain relievers, less so for stimulants. And they also pointed out, particularly among adult users of pain relievers, that the wording didn't cover the phenomenon where someone could progress from using pain relievers as prescribed to starting to overuse them, and then actually, as Lieutenant Commander Toblin was mentioning, and then starting to or continuing to take pain relievers after the initial problem had resolved itself. Briefly, there were no major issues identified with usability, with the ability to identify pill images or answer the questions. There's more information in the handout. However, there were concerns about repeating criteria for misuse over and over across a large list of prescription drugs, and the cognitive issues that I mentioned previously still remained about processing, have I used, and then have I used in the ways that I'm being asked about. So the decision was made to split this up to first ask about any use in the past 12 months or lifetime use if no past year use was reported, and then to follow up and ask questions specifically about misuse of those drugs that were specifically endorsed. And another benefit of this approach is that it adds another denominator for analysis purposes. Here's an example screenshot of what questions look like for any past year use of oxycodone products. And respondents could choose more than one response from the list, or they could say that they hadn't used any of them, but they could not do both. The wording for misuse was revised to refer to use in any way a doctor did not direct you to use it. The introduction listed the examples here on the slide for ways that people could misuse prescription drugs. And then later on in the interview, there was a question that asked people specifically if they reported misuse, in which ways did they do that. So now suppose on the previous slide I showed you that the respondent had checked Percodan. So here's what the question would look like for misuse of Percodan. And rather than the ways of misuse being repeated, the respondent could use, press the F2 function key and a pop-up window would come up with those examples again. Respondents were recruited from the Chicago, D.C., and North Carolina areas for about a one-hour interview. They took an example interview with interviewers administering probes throughout the interview. And there were three rounds of cognitive testing, and so any indication of a problem was considered noteworthy so that we could decide what to do, make a change, and then retest it. There was a mix of participants by location, by gender, adults and adolescents. We also recruited clients from the general population and from substance abuse treatment, either through flyers in the general population or in treatment or on Craigslist. More people reported use or misuse of pain relievers than stimulants, and although we did want to try to recruit people who reported use, that was not an absolute requirement. There was a second phase of cognitive interviewing that continued to test questions about pain relievers and stimulants and also included questions about tranquilizers and sedatives, but prescription drug testing was not a focus of that second phase of cognitive interviewing. Participants were debriefed about which they found to be more useful, the names or the pictures in answering the questions about misuse. A fair number reported that having the pictures was helpful for them, slightly more so for stimulants, in part because there was less name recognition for the stimulants. When people were asked about use in any way a doctor didn't direct you to use it, people who did not report misuse generally gave reasons that are consistent with not being misusers. And there was one who noted in particular not liking the effects, saying, "House could have burned down and I would have been with it." And it was encouraging that there was an adolescent participant who reported use of stimulants as prescribed, so that was some indication that that younger respondents could understand these terms. And if people reported that they used in ways not directed, they generally reported reasons that are consistent with what would be considered misuse. Generally, the people who reported misuse didn't need to use the help screen, but in at least one situation, it was helpful for an adolescent to go back and go over the terms and be reminded about what they meant. There were some potential false positives that came up, in particular the person who reported getting an injection in the hospital didn't think that this or thought that this was use without a prescription. And there was a person who reported getting a prescription or getting a drug without a prescription in another country where a prescription was required. That person did report that as misuse, but that's an issue that might not always be the case. As I mentioned earlier, respondents were asked about their ways that they misused prescription drugs. In the first round of the interviewing, the concept of overuse was asked as a single long response category. That caused some confusion where respondents thought that that all three of them needed to be true for them in order for them to choose that. So in subsequent rounds, we split that out into three separate components. By the third round, there still was some confusion about the difference between some of them. However, analytically, if we combined them together, we'd still get that someone was endorsing overuse. And people also reported gave examples of other ways that they used not as directed. Some strengths of the study, it was an iterative process. We had a mix of participants. We had a mix of locations for the cognitive interviews. We had both users and non-users. Clearly, a limitation was these data are based on a small, convenient sample. They're not intended to represent the population. And most of the other findings have been quantitative in nature. This was more qualitative. A concern people might raise is, you interviewed treatment clients. Wouldn't they be expected to understand about use in a way a doctor didn't direct you to use the drugs? True, however, some of the examples I gave, for instance, one of the quotes about the person taking more because of being in pain came from someone outside of treatment. The person who reported injection came from outside of treatment. So there also was a broader understanding in the general population about these terms. In terms of next steps, there is a field test in the survey with 2,000 interviews that will provide quantitative data and also more data on the performance of the interview, including some questions on motivations for misuse. Address rehearsal of new procedures and the questionnaire, including a Spanish language version. By the way, all of these interviews that were done in English, and the field test is in English. The dress rehearsal is planned to include a Spanish language version. And then SAMHSA plans to implement a redesigned set of prescription drug questions in their 2015 survey. Clearly, I pointed out some issues that the final redesigned questions, I don't think there will be any such thing as a perfect questionnaire. So this won't measure misuse perfectly, but based on some of the issues that I pointed out, and also in acknowledging the roles of our participants in some of the things that they provided us with information about, these changes likely will represent an improvement in measuring misuse in NISDA. Here's some more information, particularly additional people at SAMHSA you can contact. Are there any questions?
Yes, I just wondered if you ever considered using the word healthcare provider as opposed to doctor, because nurse practitioners, for example, in North Carolina, are allowed to prescribe controlled substances?
As I think we had, and I I'd need to go back and look at that, but I think that, you know, there was probing on that. Generally, I think it was sort of under, we wanted to keep it as parsimonious as possible. Yeah.
Could you elaborate on the nature of the lifetime question? And in particular, if you ask about the age of onset, because at some of the prior discussion, makes clear people are really interested in whether the use of prescribed drug leads to the use of the drug, or vice versa.
Lifetime use or misuse was for the overall category, not so like if someone said, did not report past year use of any pain reliever in the series, they were asked, have you ever used any pain reliever? As far as for age of onset, the questions that were tested were related to the prescription drugs that people endorsed misusing recently in the past year. For I think a main interest is in identifying recent initiates.
I have a question. So I saw one of the comments and I thought the same thing is, well, actually, I didn't use it as the doctor prescribed. I used less than that. And then I endorsed it. So actually, I'm not at all, I guess I'm theoretically misusing, but I'm not really misusing in a bad way. So what? How do you get around the less use as opposed to the more than prescribed use?
That is something to think about. That did come up, and in fact, one of the bullets that I didn't touch on in the interest of time was the potential false positive if people misinterpret use less as being misuse. That's a term I've used for this presentation. That it is, as I said, the question is about use in a way not directed by a doctor. And what I would suggest is if you'd like, you can maybe contact SAMHSA if you have more questions about that.
Some of us are very concerned that the epidemic of opioid deaths is actually an epidemic of polysubstance use, and that there may be a relatively small number of people who are dying from pure prescription opioid deaths. How are you addressing that?
I would refer that for you to contact SAMHSA. Not that were tested in this series, though there were some questions just about injection of stimulants, and then there are some supplemental questions later on, but mainly like the smoking or snorting refers to heroin.
We have a few minutes left. Thank you for your presentation, everyone for their presentations. But we have a few minutes left, so we could open up to questions to the entire panel now.
I just want to address the question you just asked. I don't remember the exact number, but a study when I was at CDC that we did was published in JAMA on prescription overdose deaths specifically, and we used medical examiner records, and we looked at what drugs contributed, and I don't remember the percentage, but check that paper out. Hall was the first author, and I think a substantial number are opioid only. And I know in that study we looked at prescription drug deaths, 93% had an opioid in it and only 7% didn't. And I think that many of them had only opioids. Many also had benzodiazepines. That I know because I wrote a paper on specifically on that. It was about, I think, half or so, like 45% had benzodiazepines, but I think a good chunk had just opioids.
But I think that even the data, you know, having spent a long time as an emergency medicine physician and filling out death certificates, if an opioid was involved, we would name opioid. There's no, we would not go farther to try to figure out if something else was involved.
We have toxicology, that study of toxicology reports in it, though. So so it had that level of detail in terms of what actually contributed physically to the death.
Right.
What was the other problem?
So just a lot of things don't show up in the tox screen.
Like the annex.
Or like those new designs.
Which did, no, that did show up.
Well, no, there are very, very few tox screens that will reliably provide the annex. So you may get it sometimes and not other times.
Okay.
I mean, our science of going after this, I think is not as good as like it, and it worries me when that our education is predominantly to say that physicians don't use opioids, when in fact that may not be the picture that's actually what we're seeing. In particular, because many of our tox screens fail to show fentanyl as opposed to all the other opioids, and the most common tox screens, at least in the Northeast, are completely unreliable about Xanax. It shows up sometimes, so people say we get it, but it doesn't show up all the time. Mm. And so, you know, just our capacity to go after that, I think, should caution us about how we go forward, particularly because of then what is thinking of the intervention.
I thought you had your hand raised a few minutes ago. Did you have a question as well? Scarf. Blue scarf. Okay. Any other questions? In the back?
Thank you.
Thank you.